In the Country with your host, Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Singer, songwriter, recording artist Sean Hogan has been delivering his blend of country, roots, and rock to radio, CMT, and the fans for 15 years now. Along the way, he's received awards for his songs and his performing, including the 1997 CCMA Independent Male Artist of the Year and the 2003 CCMA Roots Artist of the Year. Sean is here to talk about his music career, songwriting, performing live, his brand new album entitled Phoenix, and much more. It's my pleasure to welcome my very first guest of 2012, Sean Hogan. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
Hey, doing just terrific. It is great to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for having me on your show. It's nice to be there with you.
Yeah, it's going to be great to update the fans on your music and everything else going on. And, of course, so many of your fans know about the battle through 2011. Do you want to talk a bit about that and let us know how you're doing today?
Sure. 2011 was a tough year for me, to be sure. I don't know if I have anything to compare it to, but in early 2011, I had gotten some tonsillitis. I still have my tonsils and at that time. So in February or early March, I think it was, I had a bout of tonsillitis, and so no big deal. I got antibiotics for it, or so I thought. It was no big deal. And it seemed to clear up. And then in mid to late April, it seemed to be back. It was back again, tonsillitis. Okay, that's strange. I remember reading to my daughters, you know, and then having to leave the room because my tonsil was sore, and look in the mirror and think, yeah, it looks really bad. I went back to the doctor, and they give me more antibiotics. And so I was playing almost every weekend live somewhere in Canada or another with a few weekends off. And I felt better, but in, you know, May, June, I still didn't really feel fantastic, but I felt a little better. You know, I got rid of the tonsillitis infection. I was on the road in July, and I felt crummy again. And I felt, geez, you know, how could I feel bad again? Like, what's going on? So I went in to see a doctor at a medical center in Regina, and he looked and he said, yeah, look at that right tonsil of yours. It's still kind of, you had tonsillitis twice and it's back, so take these antibiotics. They're a third tier antibiotic, really super strong. It'll you know, kill it for sure this time. And I'm just following these doctor's orders. But I didn't feel much better, and in fact, I started getting night sweats and feeling really low energy levels, which I'm not used to because I'm usually a fairly high energy person. And so I got back at the end of July from being on the road, and I went to see my regular GP and said, you know, I've been going to these medical clinics, and I'd seen him just before I left on the road in early July. And he said, yeah, you know, I think it's just your tonsil, and you get, because, you know, I had a little bit of a lump on the side of my neck. He said, I think it's just inflamed from when you had tonsillitis a couple of times. But like I say, at the end of July, I went back to see him. He said, gee, you know, that lump looks bigger. I think we should send you to see a specialist. And so I went to an ENT, an ear, nose, and throat specialist, and in early August.
Right.
And he said, I don't like what I see, I have to tell you. You know, they look in your throat, and they look really well, but he said, you know, everything looks okay, but that lump on the side of your neck doesn't look okay. And he's a specialist, ear, nose, and throat, and he's also a surgeon. And he said, I'm going to set up a battery of tests. They're going to happen really fast. And so I had a chest x-ray, which was totally clean. And I had, a biopsy where they put these little needles into your neck, into this lump, to pull out cellular material and scope it out and check it out. And I had a CAT scan. So the CAT scan showed this lump, and I had a friend at the same time who I was talking with who said, you know, it was 10 years ago, Sean, I had this, it seems like the same thing. And it was just a node that went crazy, and, like the second node on the neck, and they found it to be benign, and it's just a strange growth. I wonder if it's the same thing. So I started thinking, well, maybe that's all it is. But, you know, long story short, the test came back and said I had cancer, this type of oral pharyngeal squamous cell carcinoma. And it's the same thing Michael Douglas had and Eddie Van Halen and Lee Von Helm, but it can show up on the base of your tongue, or it can show up in your voice box like Lee Von Helm, or it can show up in a tonsil. And so it was masked underneath this tonsillitis, and they couldn't really, you can't see it. You see tonsillitis. You see an infection, treat the tonsillitis. So it wasn't like the doctors were way, you know, off base and thinking like they were wrong. Well, from what they could see, it didn't seem like any. It was only when this lump came up when they thought, oh, that's a little weird that it's still there. And look at that right tonsil. So sure enough, I had my tonsils out again in August, which was, you know, in my mid-40s, I'm getting my tonsils out. And I've never had surgery in my life. And I recovered from that fine, you know, and they did a biopsy and found that it was only the right tonsil, not the left, and not anywhere else in my, because for people who don't know about this sort of thing, you know, they do a little scoping around. And so it wasn't the esophagus, it wasn't in the cheek and in the nose. It was in the right tonsil, and it went and made a beeline for the lymph gland on the right side of my neck, so which these cancers are known to do. And then it sets up shop in the lymph gland and just gets big and starts to grow. Oh. And it'll grow for a while there before it moves anywhere else, if it was to move. So I had a what's called a PET scan done, which is a full-body nuclear PET scan, and they check with this nuclear sugar to see if the cancer is anywhere else in your body. And thankfully, it was only in the locale of my neck and the lymph gland. So I had to commence on a heavy, rough course of radiation and chemotherapy, which I completed after, 5 or 6 weeks, 35 doses of radiation. So I thought all along, I'm going to be open with this because I'm kind of easygoing, talk about it kind of guy. And, So, and for anyone else out there, if I can be of any help, you know, because I'm going to be going through this. So, and I'm now out the other side, as it were. And, you know, I still have some side effects. They knew I was a singer, so they totally avoided intersecting through my vocal box, my larynx, at any point. So the intersections, 13 different points, went through my neck into this one locale where it deposited the radiation. And went to work killing cancer cells. The really cool thing about this, if there's anything, you know, I learned a lot, but is that your regular cells, the radiation goes through, they will be destroyed, but they all heal up. Cancer cells cannot heal. They cannot reconnect. They cannot find each other. They cannot. Okay. They just get destroyed and they can't heal. So then your body mops it out and mops it up. And as long as they can get it, that's the way it goes. So this particular cancer, there isn't cancer in my family, but it is known to affect people that have been in smoky environments, if not smokers themselves. And, you know, I'm not particularly by any means, you know, I don't even know if it's a stretch to say I'm a moderate drinker, really. So, but a lot of these cases are showing now that, the older school classic person who gets this, two-thirds of them are men, and two-thirds of them, or not two-thirds of these, but this statistic, but a lot of the classic traditional people that got this cancer, they're between their ages of 50 in their 50s through their 70s. But now there's a younger group of men between their 20s and 40s that are getting this, and they're finding it associated with a virus that can be found living dormant in the body. So the good news here is that if there's an association through all the stats they've been collecting, the virus shows a far higher trajectory of non-reoccurrence. And, so it's really amazing, actually. They're thinking that, in fact, this past year that I was in treatment might be the last year they treat people the same way. They might be over-treating them, like, heavy-handedly. Uh-huh. Maybe you don't need chemo because it's such a different success ratio for people that have this dormant virus than the people who don't. And so they found that in me, and they also said, you know, so now you'll get on plant sterols for the next 3 to 6 months to kick out the virus. And but the fact that the non-reoccurrence ratio is so much higher and the survivability rate is so much higher like from 59% to 95% survivability if they found this dormant virus. So all the stats are showing that, and I just learned so much. Now I still have these radiation-induced radiation burns on my tongue, ulcers in the back of my throat, but it's taking a while to heal. But I can sing fine. It's just, you know, only up until the last few weeks, Dave.
I was going to ask you if you're singing, if you're still able to sing during this or at least recently.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't really in the mood to sing during this.
I
was losing 30 pounds, and that's a lot for someone like myself. So I was weakened considerably, and now I'm just getting my energy and strength back. I'm pretty much back to energy levels. But I lost over 20% of my body weight and muscle and any fat. So I'm now trying to recoup that. Because it hurts so much to eat, you just stop eating to the extent that people should eat. And in fact, with some people, not me, but with some people, they have to put a stomach tube in to feed the person because the person just can't eat. For me, I just ate through the pain that I had and did not eat as much, obviously, if you can imagine losing 30 pounds in 5 weeks. It's a ridiculous ratio.
Wow.
You know, five, and I guess really the thing about radiation is it goes on for another couple of weeks after your last treatment. You're still getting worse. And so it wasn't until about a week before Christmas where I started to feel somewhat better, and it wasn't until about New Year's Eve that I started to feel my appetite coming back. And really, in the last couple of weeks since New Year's, I'm feeling much more energy, and my appetite is back. And, you know, they take you to the edge. It's pretty intense. But I'm back, and, you know, and feeling good, and I'm excited about my new album. You know?
The album is awesome. Bob Martineau sent me several songs from it that I've had a chance to listen to, and they sound terrific. I mean, the ones we're going to share on the show, A Song We Can Sing To, Better Angels Prevail, a great duet with Becca Bramlett, and Something Beautiful.
Right, just a few off the album.
Are all the songs, I mean, they're just so positive and inspiring.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. I do think there's some uplifting material on here, that's nice that you noted that. With Better Angels Prevail, I have to say that was inspired when I wrote that a couple of years ago before I started recording. I'd just written in the summer of 2009, and I'd heard Barack Obama quoting President Abraham Lincoln, and Barack was paraphrasing it and using it in a speech because of the recession and the economic devastation that was happening
right.
in the economic downturn, and saying, I hope our nation, as we, you know, try and navigate our way through these tough economic times, that better angels will prevail. Abraham Lincoln had used it at the end of the Civil War, hoping that the nation could pull itself together and forgive each other and move forward, that the nation's better angels would prevail. And when I heard that, I thought, you know, one could use that in a situation where one is trying to navigate some of the trials and tribulations of a relationship, in a personal relationship,
right.
and looking to try and make things work out for the better instead of walking away, working things out. And so that's where I got the idea for the song, and that's when I wrote that song, where that came from.
So does that happen to you quite a bit, Sean, throughout any given day when you feel inspired? Does it take a quote like that that someone says, or maybe a newspaper headline, something as basic as that to generate the idea and get things rolling?
Yeah, quite often, you know, Dave. I don't try to write every day. I think I maybe come more from a rock and roll background, and a lot of my favorite songwriters do as well, like the Bruce Springsteens out there and John Hyatts, etc. But I do, you know, make time to write when I feel it's time for me to write. And, yes, I have been moved by newspaper headlines equally to, you know, catching someone say something that I find stimulating. I remember when I wrote Conspiracy Radio, which is a song on my Catalina Sunrise album. You know, my friends and I, late at night, working in clubs in the earlier days and driving home for an hour or two after a show, under starry skies, would tune into this late-night talk show with Art Bell, syndicated.
Yes.
And they'd be talking about all these crazy possibilities out there, you know, the paranormal and government conspiracies. And And I thought, one of these days I got to write a song and a tribute to this show because it's so entertaining. And one day I got on a plane from Victoria to Toronto, and I picked up the Globe, and the lifestyle section news headline was Conspiracy Radio, the new radio format, catching people's attention. And I thought, Conspiracy Radio, that's the name of the song I got to write. So, and, you know, they've played it on his show nationwide, and it's a lot of fun to play that song. But that's, you know, yes, I do get inspired by things, news reels, if you will, or conversations that I hear elsewhere, not just in my own life. Yeah.
Now, Sean, do you have songs that that you've written that maybe they might work for you, and they probably would, but you have in mind to pitch them to somebody else? Have you done that over the years, pitch songs and had other artists record your writing?
You know, I've done that a bit, yeah, and I've had some luck. I haven't really spent a lot of time and energy doing that. I do enjoy it when I hear some other artists do one of my songs, and there's been a half a dozen artists that come to mind that I can think of. Beverly Mahood, actually, her and I wrote three songs for her second album that were on her album, and that was a lot of fun. And there's a couple of other artists, a new artist out of the U.S. named Chris Taylor, who recorded a song I wrote with Pat Alger called Genuine Love, and then a song I wrote on my own called I'd Rather Have You, and he's based out of Syracuse, New York. And it was really cool to hear those songs done by another artist. There's an artist I produced out of Regina named Chris Henderson, who covered a couple of my songs on his debut album, as well as a few other songwriters too, Steve Fox and others on that album. But, you know, it's something I've done. I kind of have to be really pleased with the song myself and write for myself, and if it inspires others to the point that they want to record it, that's great. But I can't write a lot of songs that I'm not really connected to. I mean, I can't, you know, just write a song for the sake of, well, here's a song, I think this is what people like, so I'm going to write what I think they like. You know, it has to be something I personally can relate to and then let it go.
Yeah, because there are some writers who can do that. It's not a bad or a good thing, but you've got to be true to yourself. As you say, you're not going to write about something you haven't gone through that you can't relate to.
Yeah, that's
so
right. I mean, I really have
else.
To think that people, you know, myself, at least speaking for myself, I have to be true to myself. And for sure, there has to be that connectivity. You know, I remember in the 90s it occurred to me that there sounded like there was, as much as there was, there's always a lot of great music coming out of Nashville. It's Music City, but, you know, it's Music City because there's so much music. It's not all great. You know, it's like anywhere you go, there's going to be good and bad music. But it seemed like for a while that there were these people that, and, you know, record companies were just finding them left, right, and center and throwing them up against the wall to see if they could stick. And sometimes you'd hear these songs and these wonderful voices, but they didn't seem to be connected to the song they were singing. And sure enough, you would never hear of that person again. And they'd put out these songs and they just didn't seem, in my mind, connected to the song they were singing. They could just sing well. And so I think that, you know, that's important in this line of work, that the person really is connected to the content they're singing.
Yeah, as listeners, we hear that, and we can tell the difference if someone's just singing the song, and as you say, singing well, but they're not connected, versus somebody who sounds like they've lived the song, believe in the song, and are emotionally connected to it. It makes a difference.
Absolutely. This industry is tough enough, and so if you don't love what you're doing, or if you don't really have a passion to it, I don't think you're going to make it too far, because it's not all a sweet deal. You know, there are peaks and there are valleys, and you have to ride through all of them. And I think for some people, they think it's all very glamorous, and then they get into it and think, gee, you know, just a regular day job would do me fine, because this is a bit more than I, you know, thought it would be. And,
yeah.
You know, so I think that you have to be passionate about what it is, or it has to be the right vocation for the person. And if there's anyone listening who's just starting the career, to consider that, you know, always try and be true to yourself for sure. Because if you're not happy, how can anyone else around you be authentically happy? You know, you have to really love what you're doing.
That is so true. We're going to come back and talk about a lot more with Sean Hogan, but let's share a song from the album Phoenix. And the first one we'll play, Sean, is A Song We Can Sing To. And I caught the video online the other day. Great video and nice outdoor scenery. What can you tell us about the song and the meaning behind it?
Well, that is a song idea that my friend Clayton Bellamy had, and we got together to write, and he pulled that out, and we ran with it, so to speak, and you know, that was one of those songwriting days in Nashville. I think I finished it off later, but there wasn't too much modified from that day. And you know, I think it's one of these songs that's very simple and straightforward. You know, and I have to tell this very short story, but
sure.
A good friend of mine just passed away a couple of days after Christmas. He was in a multiple motor vehicle accident, and when I think of that song now, I think of him, because he was a real salt of the earth person, same age as me, had a ranch of horses, a 7-year-old daughter, and he just loved that song. He was a liaison for all the artists at Merritt Mountain Music Festival, and his name is Todd Nelson, and just passed away recently. He just loved that song, and I'll always think of him. I've got a dedication on my new album, Phoenix, to Todd. But, you know, we went down to Southern California to film a music video for Travel Plans, which we did with my friend Colin Cunningham, and Amber Marshall from the series Heartland came down. Of course, she's got some great horse riding skills, and so does her boyfriend, who was her boyfriend in the video, Sean Turner. And so we had some extra time, so we shot more footage, and we made a video for A Song We Can Sing To. Now, we didn't get as much together for that to send it off in a fashion that we could all be satisfied with the CMT, so it became an online video. We never sent it to CMT, but... you know, so many thoughts snowballed out of that when you bring up that song for me, and one of them is my friend Todd Nelson, and the other is the fun we had making that music video. At the end of the night, we call out for
And that is great new music from Sean Hogan. It's from his brand new CD called Phoenix. And that is a song we can sing to. You can learn more about Sean online at seanhogan.net. And it's a real feel-good song, Sean. And you have quite a few of those songs we listen to that make us feel good.
Oh, well, thank you. It's interesting. I was thinking that over my career I don't have too many of the quote-unquote funny songs, but I like to think that there's a bunch of feel-good songs. And, I think that's great. For whatever reason, I mean, there are different emotions in all of us, and if you can connect to a song and it makes you feel good, I think that's a pretty good job. I'll take it.
The other ones that come to mind that make me feel good as I listen to them, Catalina Sunrise, and then a new one from the CD that there's a video for, Travel Plans. I mean, that one just takes you on a trip, as the video displays.
Yeah, you know what? That is definitely one of my favorites on the album. The title track, Phoenix, is a very feel-good-oriented tune as well. And, I shouldn't give too much away, but I would like to say that this album will be available the week of March 20th across Canada in most retail outlets. It's distributed by EMI Canada.
Great, great. We'll look forward to that. Now, you're calling us from, you're now living in Campbell River, B.C. Are you originally from Ontario?
Yes. I moved out to the West Coast in 1990 after attending music college in Toronto.
Great.
And I've been here for all the time minus almost 6 years that I lived in Saskatoon. We came back to the island in January 2009, and I've been back 3 years now. But we left in 2003 and lived in Saskatoon for a good bit of time there. And
right on.
I got my U.S. work visa, and we almost moved down to the U.S. Just as that economic downturn happened, and right at the same time, we just sold our house in Saskatoon, got the U.S. work visa, and just within weeks we found out we were expecting again. And I thought, I'm not sure where this economic quote-unquote downturn's going, but let's go back to the West Coast for a little while. And and we have a beautiful two-and-a-half-year-old son now, and couldn't be happier. Things are great.
That is wonderful to hear. Sean, I'll have you talk about your musical influences, some of the musical heroes you listened to growing up and people who inspired you to pursue this path.
Oh, sure. Well, I always loved music growing up, and I was lucky. My mom took me to a lot of symphonies, actually, and so I was exposed to, several different styles. But what I really plugged into the most, especially as a young teen, living in Sarnia, Ontario, we picked up Detroit radio quite a bit and quite easily. And I was hooked on so many of the legends that were from that part of the U.S., whether it be, Motown music or some of the individual artists that were right from around there, like Bob Seger. So much great music coming out of Detroit. It didn't matter what style of music. There was just so much great soulful music, and that's what I really felt akin to, was the soulful music, whether it was Motown or rock and roll. And my grandparents had a farm and certainly weren't so much into rock and roll, but I did get exposed to country music there. And then actually as a younger adult, I think I was 20, the first time I got a job at a radio station and worked for a couple of summers in a row. And I was working the all-night shift, and the all-night show was a split-format radio station. So it was soft, adult contemporary from about 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then it was country music from 7 p.m. to whatever, 6 a.m., I believe it was, or 5 a.m. And that's the shift I started on. So I, at first, did not have my ears wide open and listening, but being the only person in a radio station late at night and listening to country music, I started listening and thinking, there's a lot of great music here, and I didn't know any of it. And some of the great songwriters and artists of the early and mid-80s at that time, and really what got me excited was when I first heard the first album from Dwight Yoakam and Randy Travis and some of these guys that were bringing back that new traditionalist sound. But there was so much great music, and as you can tell, many different styles. So that inspired me, and I was already thinking I'm going to go to Fanshawe College and take music industry arts, which I did. I did a year of recording engineering and realized that that's cool. This is very interesting. And some of the other classes I took there, like music contracts and ear training and lead sheet reading and whatnot, that was equally as interesting to me as engineering. But engineering, or even more so actually than engineering, I realized I wanted to be more of a performer than an engineer. So I went off to Toronto and studied music and jazz. I was a percussionist, a drummer, actually, my first instrument.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And so I took drumming pretty seriously, far more seriously than I take guitar. And I was pretty good. And I was a singing drummer kind of guy. So I was like a Levon Helm, Phil Collins, Don Henley interested guy. And I'd done that quite, like I say, seriously and followed it. But by the time I was getting to my early 20s, and I've always been writing lyrics, and now I've studied jazz and I knew all my key signatures and had some fundamental keyboard experience under me, but I thought, okay, this is great, but I can't see myself pursuing jazz music either. So I was trying to find myself, and you know, really, I already kind of knew that I was interested in the singer-songwriter thing. And I was probably the only guy in the jazz program that had a cowboy hat and a coat with fringes, and you know, like, I didn't quite fit in, is what I'm saying, Dave. But I, when I moved to the West Coast, I said, okay, I'm going to rent a guitar and I'm going to learn. I'm going to take all the theory that I've memorized and all these key signatures, and I'm going to learn to play the guitar so I can take these lyrics and put them on the guitar. And that's what I did when I moved to the West Coast in 1990. And first, I had a band where, once again, I was the singing drummer in the band, you know, lead singer who's playing drums, and it was a three-piece again. I always seemed to have the three-piece back then. But shortly after that, I met up with a fellow who's from Kansas City, married a woman from Vancouver and lived in Victoria, and we became good friends. We had a duo, and so I started singing and playing guitar and working in my original slowly. And the rest is history, Dave.
And it all went from there. That's amazing. Can you remember a moment on stage, Sean, maybe just in a small crowd, but where you felt this is what you were born to do, where you got the confidence from a performance or a time?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? There's many moments like that, but honestly. But there's one or two, if you go way back to before I could really say that it was any specific style of music. It was just that I realized that I could sing, and
right.
and I had really strong relative pitch, which is not the same as perfect pitch, but really strong relative pitch. And I realized that as shy as I was, and I was shy as a kid, and shy through most of my teens, to the mid-teens anyway, that if I got on stage, because I entered this little neighborhood talent show when I was about 12, and so I was singing this tune, who I think it was a song rather from the Bay City Rollers, right? We're talking going back to the mid-late 70s. And but everybody was kind of blown away, including myself. I was a little bit caught off guard, too. So I kind of remembered that moment, though, and I was never very athletically gifted by any means, you know? So to kind of find your voice, no pun intended, but to find that it's actually your voice that's your voice and that that is your calling. And, you know, I remember that feeling going, wow, you know, and people being wowed. And I was a little bit wowed because they're wowed, you know. And so it was a bit of a eureka moment. And then falling in love with playing the drums and really the art of playing the drums and just the joy of figuring out different patterns and phrasing and, you know, running. I remember, I got to say, I had this old house we lived in Sarnia had one of those laundry chutes from the third floor down to the basement, and
okay.
It was probably a 100-year-old house. And I had my drums were in the basement, but my stereo was on the third floor, so I ran the speakers down the laundry chute, and I would start the turntable and then run down the stairs to the basement where I would play, because the speaker wires would go down the laundry chute, and I would play along to these tunes to figure them out. Then I have to run back upstairs and start the turntable again so I could get that just right, you know, and playing along and becoming a pretty good drummer. And then I was a drummer-singer at the same time. It was just natural. So, you know, those moments kind of gave me the confidence to get up in front of a high school with a band, and as long as I was on stage and singing, and not talking, but singing, I didn't have any nerve issues. But if I had to be there just talking, then I got weirded out. Kind of weird, huh?
Yeah, that is interesting how that works, the parallel between the two or the difference. But I want to turn to some music here, Sean, and I mentioned this song earlier, Better Angels Prevail, and you told us a bit about it earlier, the inspiration behind it. It's a duet with Becca Bramlett. Tell us a bit about Becca. I've heard that name around the music scene for a long time, a great singer. And talk about sort of maybe getting her as part of the song before we play it.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, with Becca, you know, I first became aware of her back in the mid to late 90s, and she'd already been touring around the world with Fleetwood Mac in place of Stevie Nicks. But I heard her on Delbert McClinton albums. You know, I really love a lot of these roots here artists. I mean, I'm always been a bit left of center with my own music on country radio, but I was able to dovetail it there. But a lot of the artists I listen to, you know, consistently are a little bit off the grid for commercial radio. And so Delbert McClinton is one of these Texas blues country, you know, singer-songwriter types. And Becca was singing on a couple of his albums, but one specifically that I was listening to back in around 97, 98. I just loved her voice. And then I heard her singing on a few other things like Johnny Lang. And then she was singing and touring with Faith Hill and so many different artists. But I had heard that she was singing on a friend's album, a blues singer that I know, and asked to get in touch with how could I contact and find out if maybe she would consider singing on my project. So through a network of friends and channels, I got a call and we started talking and I sent her the material to check it out and she quite liked it. I've got her on at least 4 cuts on this album, I guess, out of 10. And,
oh, great.
And you know, we hit it off. We have many conversations on the phone and she is just such an amazing singer and held in such high esteem by so many people in so many different genres. I encourage anyone to, she's on the latest Robert Plant album. She's touring with Gretchen Wilson and singing with Dave Matthews and so many people. Matchbox 20. But if you Google Becca singing with Fleetwood Mac, you'll hear some great live material as well, and or with Delbert McClinton, and I'm just honored that she was singing on this project, Dave.
Awesome. Well, let's share this now, Sean. One of the great reasons to buy the album, Phoenix, when it's out in March, this is Better Angels Prevail, Sean Hogan and Becca Bramlett on In the Country.
Colors reminding me of the way you looked last night. Tell myself to stop the truck, hit the road, don't even think about love. Oh,
Hogan and Becca Bramlett on In the Country and Better Angels Prevail from the forthcoming album from Sean called Phoenix. Great sound there together. Voices really work well.
Thank you. Thank
now,
you.
I'd
love to do a live show sometime and have her come up and join us. That'd be fabulous.
That would be awesome. When you perform live, Sean, can you describe that feeling, getting the instant feedback from the fans, they're getting into the songs? How does that feel when you're in that place, in that zone?
Well, I mean, honestly, no exaggeration, that it is kind of otherworldly, because it's you sort of leave the physical and you're just it's all cerebral, you know. I mean, it's like a fantastic scalp massage, only better. You know, I mean, there's nothing better than a scalp massage, if you ask me. But basically, when you're having that much enjoyment from music, there's some serious chemicals getting released in your brain that are all positive. And that's how I describe it. So, you know, when you get a band working as a unit and playing great music, there's nothing better that I've found.
What is the feeling like, Sean, when somebody comes up to you after a show or after listening to your record, and one of the songs has touched them in a particular way, has maybe brought some meaning to their life, or has they've connected with the song? What is that feeling like?
It's a little surreal. I have to tell you, too, now being somebody who's you know, to use the old words that maybe are overused, but cancer fighter and battling cancer. The weird thing about that is that it's actually, you know, you're battling something that's going on in your body. That's you're making too many of these certain cells that are out of whack. So I don't know. I have a bit of a inner turmoil with the whole idea of the battle, but it is trying to right your body's system. And why I bring that up is because I've had over the last 6-7 years. A few people tell me that their music helped them through cancer. My music helped them through cancer, I should say.
Wow.
So that that I didn't realize. I was really moved hearing that. But now, having gone through being treated for cancer, and hopefully never having to do it again, I might add. But knowing that firsthand, it's an overwhelming situation. And when people told me that before, that they would request Catalina Sunrise be put on as they're being pumped with chemo, it was really moving. And other people that have had battles against, you know, substance abuse, and said that the song of mine named, which is called Vulnerable, really touch them and help them. Or, you know, I remember a young Aboriginal woman who recorded that song, and other people who heard it and said, you know, this song really moved me and supported me. And, you know, it's not why you wrote the song necessarily. In this case, why I wrote this song, I never thought I'm not trying to write a song that's, what can I write that's going to move somebody? You know, you just try and write something from an honest place that you think is worthy of being created and having a lot of fun and the enjoyment of it, and then later that it's actually giving someone else that much enjoyment. It's a stirring feeling, you know. It really is motivating and very satisfying to continue doing what you do when you get those stories.
Yeah, it takes music to a whole other level. And another thing you did that took things to a whole other level, connected to your music, and we'll talk about it, the Canadian Country Christmas Tour, which you began in 2004. And this has gone on to be a big success every year, raising money. It's for local charities in different areas where you perform. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's really been something else. Various community charities have benefited from it, from hospital foundations to, you know, Boys and Girls Clubs to food banks, and it's different. There's no one size fits all, and depending on you know, who we're working with, it's a different nonprofit organization, generally speaking, that is getting the benefit of it. And so, you know, it really has been something that I never saw coming. I wrote a song again, in 03, I think, and we recorded and made a video for it in 04. It's called It's Christmas Time, and And I thought it wouldn't be fun to have other artists sing on this and maybe try and see what we can do with this. I was inspired because 20 years earlier, the Do They Know It's Christmas from the British rock scene that put that song out in 84, I thought was a fantastic accomplishment. And it certainly was from some big international stars. But what could independent Canadian country artists do if we banded together and did what we could? Now, some of these individuals who sang on the track are now in Canada, certainly fairly big, like Gord Bamford, who sang on it, and he wasn't at the same stature as a if we can use the word star again,
sure.
At the time, but definitely that song inspired us to go out and do shows, and I just felt like it was doing such a great thing. I wanted to do it every year, so I did. And last fall, I couldn't do it for obvious reasons, but Duane Steele kept the ball running and went out and did several shows in Western Canada. So I hope to be certainly doing the Christmas tour. I have every intention to do it next year. And, it's really done a lot of good things for people. It's cool.
That's awesome. And, of course, this year, Thomas Wade, along with his new group, Wade, Amy, Wade, I had him on the show in 2011.
I heard that show. It was really good, actually, yeah.
Great, thanks. Yeah, it was great to talk with Thomas. And, of course, he had the song I Can't Wait for Christmas, which was sort of helping you out. Quite amazing how the community comes together. And
I tell you, I was really moved by that and that initiative. And there was a benefit show that they organized in London, Ontario, that did really great, and one in just outside of Edmonton by the airport, and it did fantastic, and one down in Victoria. And these people were just, coming to me and saying, we want to do this for you. And I was just like, I was really moved, like I can't describe. It was really something else, and certainly did help out my family, and I had a really tough time.
Let's turn to some music, Sean. And this song, the word is beautiful, and that's in the title as well. It's called Something Beautiful, and it's just such a moving song, and it sort of ties into, as we've talked about, people helping and just life and the great moments there can be. Tell us about the inspiration behind the song, and then we'll share it with our listeners.
Oh, sure. Okay, well, Something Beautiful, actually, I was living in Saskatoon, and it was 4 or 5 years ago when I wrote that. But my daughter, who just turned 6 at the time, came running in the back door, and she was telling me and very enthusiastically about this conversation that she swore she was having with this magpie in the backyard. And, the bird was sitting there, as magpies do. They're very loud and vocal and probably, thought that Tess was in their space, right? So telling Jess to get out of the scene or whatever, but she was talking back to it, and they were having a little conversation. So she was really excited about it and telling me about it in that moment, and I thought it was so cute, and it just made me realize that kind of magic that exists when you're a young person, and the world is magic, right? So I thought, well, I got thinking about that and being in that moment and being so lucky to be able to enjoy that experience in life. And I was telling my friend Daryl Burgess about it in Nashville, and I was just singing a couple of lines and picking at the guitar a bit. We were getting together to do some writing, and I already had a couple of lines come out. I thought, that's really cool. Let's go with that. So we did, and we changed it from, bluebirds are a bit more common everywhere in North America, The magpies are sort of one of those birds on the prairies. But yeah, so it got changed a little bit in regard to that, but the sentiment and the strength of the song really came together, and Daryl Burgess is a great songwriter. People that may recall the song that he had a big hit with, Just Came Back to Say Goodbye, won a Juno for Single of the Year in 1990 with Colin James.
But
we've written a few things together. He's another person. He's a drummer-singer who also plays acoustic guitar, and he's had some hits with other individuals as well, country artists. So, that's where that song came from. And again, I think the best songs come from the best honest, legitimate experiences. Yeah.
And it is a great song. Our listeners will hear that now. And another reason to get the album Phoenix on the way to stores and online in March. This is Sean Hogan and Something Beautiful on In the Country.
Daddy, she said, have you ever seen a bluebird talk to a girl like me? Come on out back, I'll show you what I mean before it flies away. There's a grown-up world that's on my mind. She can cut right down to size. It's like her heart is slowing time and telling mine to wait. I want to show you something beautiful. We only got a moment before it flies away. I know I'm watching something wonderful, and she don't even know how I'm gonna miss these days. These days. One day she'll run right out that door. She won't be living here no more. She'll kiss her mom, and then I'm sure her leaving's gonna sting. While she sleeps in her dreams tonight, I look in and I call my wife. This must be what angels look like before they get their wings. I wanna show you something beautiful. We only got a moment before it flies away. I know I'm watching something wonderful, and she don't even know how I'm gonna miss these days. These days, they don't hang around forever. Time really is. Chance for another day, and another night goes by. I want to show you something beautiful. We only got a moment before it flies away. I know I'm watching something wonderful. She don't even know how I'm gonna miss these days. These days. She don't even know how I'm gonna miss these days. I wanna show you something beautiful. She don't even know how I'm gonna miss these days.
And there's Sean Hogan, a beautiful song indeed. That is called Something Beautiful from his brand new album that will be released in March. The album's called Phoenix. Sean, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. I've been a fan for so many years, listening to your songs on the radio and videos on CMT and enjoying them. It's been a real pleasure sharing this last hour with you.
Well, thank you, Dave, very much. It's an honor to be the first guest of the year on your show, and very much appreciate you having me on the show today. It's been real nice talking with you.
My guest today has been a country artist, Sean Hogan, and his brand new album is Phoenix. Been a great hour-long chat. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.